We're ready.
Can I ask first, Ms. Coolidge, are you going to share any time with Amicus? I don't see anybody here.
No.
All right, and on the defendants, how are you all going to split time?
Yes, sir.
You intend to split time?
Mr. Langley will take about 2 minutes, and I will take the remaining of the time.
Thank you.
Don't mean to shut him down after 2 minutes? Not really.
He's going to address just a very discreet issue, and then I will address.
Okay.
Thank you.
We're ready.
And Judge, if you could give me a wave or something at five, when I have 5 minutes left. Yeah, thank you. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Beth Coolidge, and I represent the plaintiffs and actually the bankruptcy estate, since my client has declared bankruptcy, and so I've been representing the bankruptcy estate in this matter. And I raised several issues in the opening brief. My intention is to focus primarily on the issue regarding whether a fetus is a person for purposes of the wrongful death statute. Obviously, if you have any questions about any of the other issues, I'm certainly happy to address those, but that I'm intending to primarily focus on that.
Let me interrupt you. You've been looking, I think, for de novo review for some time in your career, and now you have it. And the question is, can you survive a motion to dismiss with respect to the fetuses in light of the expert testimony currently in the record?
And which expert testimony are you talking about?
I'm talking about the OBGYN testimony.
The testimony
of Dr. Edwards, as I recall.
On causation, is that what you're talking about?
Causation and negligence, yeah.
Your Honor, the issues in terms of whether or not the fetus is a person for purposes of the wrongful death statute, that issue, none of the defendants raised the issue that causation of whether or not the fetuses were alive, and there is ample evidence in the discovery that these fetuses were alive when Mrs. Stachel came to the hospital.
But that, if I can interrupt you, Ms. Coolidge, I'm not sure that's the issue. I agree with you. Dr. Schwartz at least raises the fact question of whether they're alive. The question is whether there's causation here and whether there was a probability that had the C-section been performed, the fetuses would have survived. Now, you say in your brief, Dr. Schwartz testified to that. What you cited struck me as exactly the opposite. The question was, to a probability, will there be a fetal demise even when a perimortem C-section is done? Answer, yes. It seems to me your own expert said it's probable they would have, the fetuses would have died even if the C-section was done.
Yeah, and I feel somewhat responsible for this because none of the defendants raised this issue, and we were in the process of responding to numerous issues on summary judgment. There was a single line in the hospital's motion where they raised the issue of whether or not the fetuses were alive or not. None of the other doctors raised it at all. There is evidence of the record, and I know the court has discretion to affirm on any ground if there's support for it, but I will tell you that this is not a case where you should exercise that discretion because there is ample evidence. There is a Dr. Wes Tyson who said that the babies died when the mother died, and that's their expert. But we just didn't brief it. I mean, we really didn't brief it because it wasn't an issue. It wasn't an issue that the trial court addressed, and it wasn't anything that we were focused on.
And Ms. Coolidge, it is an issue on this appeal. At least Dr. Staples raised it, and you responded in your reply brief. So then the question, again, is not whether they were alive. The question is of one of causation. Would this, had a C-section been done, would there, is there a probability the babies would have survived?
There is plenty of evidence.
What is it? You cited to us what I read, which says exactly the opposite. And so what you've said now twice, there's wealth of evidence. What evidence in the record specifically is there that these fetuses would have survived or probably would have survived if a C-section was done?
Dr. Schwartz testified during his deposition to a probability that the fetuses would have survived. They cited very selective and I would put you distorted in testimony. And our motions for summary judgment, I mean, it wasn't the issue on summary judgment, Your Honor. And I understand that you can, you know, if you want to exercise your discretion and deprive our client from having his day in court when he lost three members of his family, but this was not the issue.
Ms. Kurwitz, none of us takes lightly the fact that these people died. Nobody takes that lightly. But it would help us significantly if you could give us a citation in the record to the testimony you just referenced. You said that he testified that the fetuses would have survived had there been a C-section. Where is that testimony?
We did not attach that testimony to our response to their motions for summary judgment because that wasn't the issue that was raised.
We have a full copy of the record.
I understand. No, but we don't, I mean, at the state of the record, there was no trial.
So you're saying you can't cite anything to
us? I'm saying that there was testimony during discovery. There is a factual issue that clearly a disputed issue as to whether or not the babies would have survived. I'm sure the defense will say they wouldn't have. There is evidence in the discovery. There's disputed evidence.
I'm asking you for is a citation to a place in the record, ma'am.
And I'm telling you, Your Honor, that we did not respond to that issue on appeal.
Thank you.
Would you like time to give us that cite?
Sure. I would, you know what? I'll reserve the remainder of my time on rebuttal, and I will look to see if...
No. I don't mean now. I mean following the argument.
Yes, I would. Thank you.
Okay.
Thank you.
Go ahead with your primary argument.
The issue that's in this case, and I'm sorry if I'm a little taken aback by the direction that it seems this court is going, but the issue in this case is not whether or not the rights of the unborn. The issue in this case is the right of a parent who loses a child in a hospital by medical malpractice, and whether or not that parent has a right to bring a cause of action and have his day in court. The issue in this case is not the right of the unborn. It's whether or not physicians in this state are immune from lawsuit if they commit negligence and it kills a baby before it's born. That's the issue, Judge. If this ruling is allowed to stand, doctors in this state will have immunity. OBGYNs who take care of mother and child will have immunity if they commit malpractice and a baby dies in utero. That's the result of allowing the district court's decision to stand. And I put to you that this is really just an issue of straight statutory construction. The wrongful death statute is a remedial statute, and I know there was lots of arguing back and forth about whether it's remedial or whether it's in derogation of the common law. There is one Supreme Court case that addresses this, and it's Barnhill, and it doesn't address this exact issue, but it recognizes that the purpose of the wrongful death statute, which was to close a loophole in the common law so that a tortfeasor doesn't get off scot-free if he hurts somebody badly enough that the victim of his negligence is killed.
If I can ask you, you're talking about the purpose of the statute. I take it, is your argument that the word person is ambiguous?
I don't know that it's ambiguous. I think that any time you read a statute, you have to look at the plain language in conjunction with what the overarching purpose is. I don't know, think it's necessarily ambiguous. I think when you look at that term and along with the rest of the language in the statute, which says that a person who is wrongfully killed has a cause of action, if that person would have had a right to bring that action if that person had lived.
But the question here, wouldn't it be whether the fetuses here are a person under the statute? Isn't that the first issue or the principal issue?
That is the first issue.
Okay.
That is the first issue.
And if we find, if it is unambiguous, do we get to even look at the purpose just as a matter of pure statutory interpretation? You've jumped in. You make a very eloquent argument about the purposes, and I understand your argument, but I'm just curious as to whether we get to any of that. Don't we have to first address whether person is ambiguous or not?
No, I think that any time you look at the plain language of the statute, you read it in light of the overriding purpose. I think that is what the law of statutory construction is, and especially when we're dealing here with a remedial statute. Now, the defendants have all cited numerous cases that seem to suggest that the Wrongful Death Act is in derogation of the common law and should be strictly construed. And what I would point out is that every single one of the cases that the defendants cited, they all had to do with let me start this way. The Wrongful Death Act, the purpose of it is remedial. It created a cause of action where one didn't exist to plug what the legislature saw as an injustice in the common law. It creates a limited right, so it's only certain people that can bring an action. The remedy is limited in terms of damages. All of the cases that were cited by the defense dealt with standing or who shares in the remedy. Though that is proper to strictly construe that, because the limitations are, that should be strictly construed. But the Supreme Court has recognized that the overriding purpose of this act is remedial. And that the purpose of the act should be broadly construed. And I think you do look at the purpose of the act when you're reading the language. You know, all of the cases that I cited, they're not necessarily dealing with ambiguous statutes. They're talking about, that's how you approach it. You look at the plain language and you read it in light of the overarching purpose of the law. If you read the statute to exclude a fetus, a viable fetus, and let's take for, you know, as a hypothetical, let's say that the Stodgill twins were actually 9 months in utero. They were due to be born the next day. That Mr. Stodgill would not have had an ability to bring a suit. Thank you, Judge. I'll reserve the remainder of my time.
May it please the court. Jason Langley, number 39060, on behalf of St. Thomas More Hospital. In my brief 1 to 2 minutes, I just want to address a narrow issue that only relates to the hospital and the unique position the hospital is in this case, and I'll cede the rest of the time to Mr. Yoon to address the other issues. The hospital is uniquely situated in this case because it does not practice medicine and is not by law responsible for the decision in this case whether or not to perform a perimortem C-section. Plaintiffs don't even address this in their briefing, in their arguments on appeal. Down below at the summary judgment stage, they did not bring forth admissible evidence on summary judgment to refute this. This decision is solely within the province of the physician, and that's undisputed based on plaintiff's emergency medicine physician expert, Dr. Glazer, their obstetrical expert, Dr. Schwartz, and Nurse Hensley, their nurse expert. And I want to point out two specific portions of the deposition testimony of these experts that say that any action of the nurses is completely irrelevant to this decision. So not only do they not make the decision, but any actions they might have taken are totally irrelevant. Dr. Schwartz says detectability of fetal heart tone should have no bearing on the decision to initiate a perimortem C-section. That's on page 1645 in the record. It's attached to the hospital's motion for summary judgment. Dr. Glazer agrees.
Starling, I'm sorry, just for clarification, the hospital here was sued only for the nurse's conduct, not the doctor's conduct?
Right, because the hospital is not, by law, responsible for a doctor's conduct.
I'm just
correct.
Making sure.
Thank you, Judge Gabriel. And Dr.
Glazer, and that rule you just cited is true even if the emergency room physician, for instance, was an employee of the hospital.
I think that's true under Villalpando, but it's never been asserted in this case that the hospital is responsible for the physician conduct. As I said, it's undisputed based on the testimony that they, in fact, are not. And Dr. Glazer also, just to continue with the second quote, he agreed that his opinion was that a physician should have immediately done a C-section. That was his position, that 8 to 10 minutes afterward, that should have been done for there to be this, to this point, not measured any chance that plaintiffs are asserting, and that any actions of the nurses were irrelevant to this decision. So regardless of what this court does on loss of chance or personhood, respecting the fact that that's where the court went with the decision because it could decide the entire case that way, the summary judgment must be affirmed as to the hospital. Thank you, Your Honor.
Most of your time, sir.
Yes, Your Honor. Thank you. Good afternoon. My name is David Yoon. I represent Defendant Appellee. My registration number is 23448, and I will be arguing all the remaining issues on behalf of all of the appellees. Judge Roy started off asking whether plaintiffs could survive a motion to dismiss, or I construe that, or a motion for summary judgment based on Dr. Schwartz's testimony, and I'd like to answer that, and I would submit that they cannot. And as this court knows, this court can affirm the judgment on any ground supported by the record, even if that ground was not articulated or considered by the trial court.
Was it argued below this issue?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. The hospital specifically argued it on pages 11 and 12 of its summary judgment motion, and I have it up here in the unbold, it says B, The decision whether to perform a perimortem C-section is not causally related to the outcome of the fetuses. It also says in page 12, says the plaintiff has not established a causal link between the alleged negligence and death of the fetuses. It also mentions, according to the plaintiff's own expert, Dr. Schwartz, it is likely the fetuses would have died even if the C-section had ultimately been performed. So that was raised in the summary judgment motion.
And by the hospital only?
The hospital, and later when the summary judgment was, I believe Dr. Pellner actually joined in that hospital's motion for summary judgment. After the summary judgment was granted, Dr. Staples also joined, and I don't think it was even disputed, opposed by plaintiffs. So whatever applied to the hospital applied to us. And in response, they did not offer any admissible evidence. They didn't offer any sworn testimony because it did not exist. And I want to just point out, Ms. Krulwich mentioned that Dr. Schwartz testified that the fetuses would have survived. And he actually testified unequivocally. There's a question posed on page, it's Exhibit C. And I'm going to read actual testimony of Dr. Schwartz on page 151 of his deposition, and it was attached to the hospital's motion for summary judgment. And there was a question. In terms of the fetuses, had Dr. Staples come to the hospital and done a cesarean section, you can't say to a probability it would have made a difference in the fetuses, correct? He answered, I don't know. They had no other expert to testify regarding this issue. It was only Dr. Schwartz, and he said unequivocally, I don't know. And we quoted that, Your Honor, in our brief. So we would submit that this court should affirm the entry of summary judgment on the issue of causation alone. But if the court were to decide the issue of whether a fetus is a person, we would submit that there are several reasons why the trial court's decision should be affirmed. First, the plain meaning of the statute.
Let me ask you a question first. Does a physician owe a duty to the fetus?
I believe the physician owes a duty to the mom until the fetus is born. I believe in
there's no duty to the fetus in utero.
Indirectly, because the fetus is a part of the mother.
That's a doctrine that's been rejected in the common law for a long time, isn't it? A viable fetus is not a part of the mother.
As we pointed out in our brief, at the common law, a fetus, unborn fetus, was not considered a person. As in Roe versus Wade, U.S. Supreme Court did an extensive analysis of the history of the common law and said that an unborn has never been recognized in the law as a person in the whole sense. In fact, U.S. Supreme Court concluded that the word person under the 14th Amendment, which, by the way, was enacted at the same time as the Colorado Wrongful Death Statute, does not include the unborn. So we would submit at common law, because unborn fetus was not considered a person, there's no indication whatsoever that the General Assembly intended to allow a cause of action for fetal death at the time it was enacted.
Well, there's a whole bunch of law that says no one even thought about it in 1870 or whatever it was.
Sure. I mean,
because the whole idea of fetal survival and fetus separately didn't even exist. So I'm not sure that helps so much. But let me ask you this. Do you think the word person in the statute is ambiguous?
I would submit that it is not ambiguous, and here's why. As the court knows, and as Judge Roy knows from the Gonzalez case, a person is defined in the Colorado Revised Statute as an individual. Individual, as Judge Roy also wrote in the Lage case, this is important, is...
Everything I write it.
Yes.
You left that wide open.
And the Judge Roy said, individual is defined as existing as a separate and distinct entity in the Lage case. Because the wrongful death statute should be strictly construed, and because an unborn fetus is not commonly understood as a separate person from the mother, or assigned separate rights, legal rights from the mother, we submit that the plain language of the statute does not support the view that a fetus is a person.
What do you do, Mr. Yoon, with cases like Espadero, and I understand you think it just was wrongly decided, fair enough. It makes some compelling points. You know, take the case of twins, and, you know, one dies 2 minutes before birth, and the other dies 1 minute after birth, and your argument puts them in different positions. Now, I recognize, you know, the laws do draw lines that sometimes are perhaps arbitrary, but that there's an inequity about that result. Sure. That why should the child who survived, you know, his twin by 2 minutes get to sue, and the child who died in utero doesn't?
Sure, Your Honor. I think, as the court pointed out, in this area, if the court were to draw any line, it could, in a close case, lead to an arbitrary, unjust result. And here's why. For example, if the court were to follow the majority of the jurisdiction and draw the line at viability, it could potentially lead to a cause of action for the death of a fetus at, let's say, 22 weeks. But a cause of action for maybe 24, 28 weeks is allowed. So I think any line the court draws could lead to an arbitrary and, in close case, unjust result. But more importantly, given that the wrongful death statute is a creature of statute, it's a statute, the General Assembly should draw the line, not the courts. And I think the trial court explained this very well. The trial judge said the legislature is the appropriate place to debate and consider whether to draw the line at birth, viability, conception, or some other benchmark, including considerations of amount of litigation that might arise because of the difficulty for the parties to establish that they met whatever benchmark. And we submit, in this case, the political arena is the proper place to decide, because the issue of whether a fetus is a person is such a controversial issue. It has been the subject of two constitutional amendments that voters of Colorado have rejected so far. It will again be a part of a constitutional amendment this coming November that the Colorado voters must decide. Given the controversial issue, it makes perfect sense to allow the legislature to debate and decide whether or not to allow a cause of action for fetal death. And finally, if the court's decision to draw any line before birth will have unintended consequences.
Haven't almost all of the states done so?
Yes, I think the language is different, and we pointed out that some of them are different. I think it's more accurate to say there are actually legislature that actually enacted to include specifically fetus.
I understand it, but a large number of states have construed person to include a viable fetus, have they not?
I think there were a handful or more. There were also, as we pointed out, equal amount of that. Not equal amount, I'm probably overstating it. There were states that rejected that notion. I believe Virginia, California, and other states. But we would submit, more importantly, it's a decision that the legislature should decide. And there are many reasons. One is it's inconsistent with our constitutional right to abortion. It's inconsistent to find that a fetus is a person under the Wrongful Death Act, and then to find that a mother has a constitutional right to terminate that life.
I'm not suggesting it occurred here, but mightn't it occur that a doctor, probably an OBGYN, has a child in distress in utero and decides it's better to let him die in utero than die outside?
I think that, as I said, wrongful death action did not exist at common law. And that decision has to be drawn.
Also, there's no prohibition against wrongful death statute actions at common law, was there? The common law didn't say there was no right to a wrongful death case.
I think our case law says it's in derogation of common law. It didn't exist. So, no, they did not specifically say that it shouldn't, the legislature doesn't.
Common law is not to the contrary, then isn't the statute remedial to fill a gap in the common law?
That's a good point, Your Honor. Regardless of whether the court finds it remedial or not, there are at least seven cases I know of, including a Colorado Supreme Court case that has held that the wrongful death statute must be strictly construed because it's in derogation of common law.
Fortunately, there are Colorado Supreme Court cases that go both ways. So,
well, in Bonneville, the court did not actually held. It said it was remedial, but didn't say that it should be liberally construed or broadly construed. I'm not aware of any Colorado case that holds that. And go ahead.
Please go.
I just also want to mention, our common law, Colorado recognizes wrongful life claims and wrongful pregnancy claims. That is, that the physician failed to terminate a pregnancy. And if this court were to find that a fetus is a person under the Wrongful Death Act, it would be, again, incompatible or inconsistent with the law that allows a cause of action against a physician for failing to terminate that life. So we would submit that it's best to leave it for the legislature to decide. If the court has any other questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Since I don't have a lot of time, I will take Judge Roy's offer in terms of being able to provide to the court after the argument's over the evidence.
Would you stop the clock a second? Why don't you submit a letter to us, but to the judges individually, not to the clerk's office, so okay. We'll get them. Have it to us within 10 days with a copy to counsel, not less than a couple pages long, setting forth where in the record the strongest evidence exists to support your position.
Okay.
Did you mean not more than a couple pages long?
I'm just looking for sites. I'm not looking for more arguments.
Yeah, you said not less than.
Oh, not less. I said so. Not more than.
That's okay. I understand.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. You know, I think that Judge Roy kind of really laser-beamed in on what really is the critical issue here, and is that each of these doctors have taken the position, and the hospital has taken the position. Judge Dr. Pellner, most specifically, explicitly, saying that Colorado physicians do not have a duty to an unborn child, to a fetus, until it is born. That is the position that has been taken here, and that is the significance of the decision in this case. And the Colorado Supreme Court did say that the purpose of the wrongful death statute is remedial. No, they didn't talk about whether or not it should be broadly construed, but remedial statutes are broadly construed. The definition of person in criminal law is different than in the personal injury context. You know, criminal law statutes are strictly construed. You do not read anything into a criminal law statute. It has to be strictly construed because you're talking about a person's liberty. And in Colorado, we codified our criminal laws, and it supplanted all of the common law criminal laws. So criminal laws have to be strictly construed. The Wrongful Death Act is remedial. That's what the Supreme Court has said, and it is to be broadly construed. And when you look at the purpose of the act, and the purpose of the act really is not up for debate, it was to plug this hole in the common law. And if you construe the statute to eliminate any wrongful death action for an unborn viable fetus in a medical malpractice case, you're absolutely turning the purpose of the statute on its head. And you are allowing I'm not saying that a doctor would ever intentionally go in there and say, I'm going to let this child die, but, you know, obstetrical cases are the most highly contested cases in medical malpractice. And they're cases that oftentimes are seen as driving up malpractice premiums, and emotions run high in these cases. But if you're an OBGYN and you're presiding over a birth and that birth is going badly, and you believe that the child, if born, may have severe brain damage, do we want a law that actually would encourage, provide an incentive, whether it's conscious or unconscious, for the doctor to not do everything he could to save a life and let that baby die? That's the effect. If this law is permitted to stand, if this decision of the district court, because you know that this is, I mean, there's going to be, this decision is being passed around to district court judges, and that's the import of this decision here. And I would really encourage this court to not use its discretion to decide this case on another ground, because there is evidence, and I will provide it to the court, but there is evidence in the record. When Mr. Chun said that there was no evidence that these babies would have survived, that's simply not true. In terms of the other states, the vast majority of the other states construing statutes that are virtually identical to our statutes. Most of the statutes use the word person. They may have some other verbiage around them, but in all material respects, the vast majority of the states have statutes that are very, very close to ours that use the word person, and the vast majority of the states have construed those statutes to include a wrongful death action could be brought on behalf of a viable fetus. There's only 10 states, at least the last time I checked, and I tried to do another check over the weekend just to see if I could update myself. I didn't find any changes. 10 states that have found that there is no right to bring a wrongful death action in a case such as this. The vast majority of states have followed what we're asking this court to do. There's only a tiny fraction of those states that have included any language about a fetus in their wrongful death statutes. Almost all of the wrongful death statutes have terms like person or human being, or some say death of one. It's language. Most of these statutes were passed in the late 1800s. Unless the court has any more questions, I will submit my two pages, no more, providing you and show you that there is disputed evidence, and my client deserves to stay in court.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Neal, I didn't mean to freeze you out. We're going to get a letter within 10 days, just citing to the record. I don't know if there's any necessity that you respond to that, but if you wish, you may do so on a similar limitation within 3 days of the submittal.
Thank you, Your Honor.
And on behalf of all the defendants? The hospital?
We can all work together, Your Honor.
Okay. Good. Well, thank you. All of the counsel for their excellent briefs and their argument. The case will be deemed submitted. A written opinion will issue in due course.